So as you can see, you have the x-axis where you have the impact. That means the severity of the risk. So it starts with low, medium, and high. And on the left y-axis, you have what is the likelihood of occurrence, that is probability of occurrence of the risk. So it goes without saying that the top right corner is the most critical risk. That means the likelihood of that risk occurring is highest, and also the impact of that particular risk is highest. Now look at the other way around. Look at the bottom left corner. So the likelihood of that risk is very, very low, and the impact is also very low. That means even if that risk does occur, the impact on the supply chain will be minimal. So this is a risk that can be tackled at a later date. But what needs to be tackled on priority is the critical risk, which is on the top right corner. After that, you can tackle the risks which are labeled as high. That means the likelihood is very high and there is a medium impact. Also, where the impact is very high, though the likelihood may be medium. So this is how you look at the risk based on the likelihood, that is probability, and the impact it has on the supply chain. The second one is the failure mode and effect analysis. So this is a systematic method used to identify the potential failure modes and their impact. And based on this, you prioritize for the corrective action. So what you do is you are actually putting the potential failure modes, how the failures can occur. So in our case, they will be basically the risk events actually happening. The second will be what is the severity of the the failure or the risk occurrence. And the third is the detection. That means, can you detect this kind of risk or a failure? Like for example, if there is an earthquake, now the possibility of detecting an earthquake may be very, very low. So this would rank, you know, higher on the scale because you cannot detect it. And this will hit you by surprise. But on the other hand, something like a flood, you get certain early warnings. I mean, there could be weather forecast, etc., which tells you that there is likelihood of a heavy rain, which can result in, let's say, flooding, etc. Also, you know, many a times there are dams and reservoirs, and when the waters are being released, there is a warning which is issued beforehand. So you have certain advance notification. So there, the detection is possible. So the combination of these ratings, that means one is the failure possibility. The second is the impact severity, that means the impact it has on the supply chain. And the third is the possibility of detecting the risk or the occurrence of the risk. So these three put together, you generate a number, which is known as the risk priority number or RPN. And this will tell you which failure mode or which risk needs to be given the highest priority. So FMEA can help identify potential operational failures in a rural supply chain, such as transportation delays, poor storage conditions, whatever. So based on the methodology which is prescribed by the failure mode and effect analysis. Next we come to is the SWOT analysis. So this is strength and weakness, opportunity and threat. Now here, the first two, strength and weakness, these are the internal things. So we are looking at what are the strength and weakness of the supply chain. And these are essentially that of the business or the supply chain. And when you look at opportunity and threat, they are external in nature, because opportunities and threats are something which are dictated by the markets or the external stimulus, which is beyond the control of the supply chain. So the goal is to capitalize on the strengths and to mitigate yourself against the weakness. That means you can try and address those areas where you are weak and try and strengthen those areas. So that means you try and eliminate the weaknesses which are there in the system. Also, you can look at, you know, what are the opportunities that you can avail. I mean, the supply chain can take advantage of the opportunities which are available to them. At the same time, you need to look at how you can mitigate the threats, how you can overcome the threat. So, rural supply chain can use the SWOT to identify internal weaknesses, that is lack of infrastructure or access to technology, which can be corrected, you know, because these are the internal factors which need to be rectified. And external threats, which is unpredictable weather patterns or market volatility, political instability, etc., which are not within your control. So it can also help identify opportunities for improving the resilience, such as diversifying supplier on or introduction of new technology. Diversifying supplier is, you know, what we already talked about, that if you are dependent only on one set of suppliers, then maybe you should have a plan B, a second set of suppliers, so that in case for some reason your regular suppliers are not able to supply, then you still can source your inputs like seeds, fertilizers, tools, etc., from another set of supplier. The next one is the Monte Carlo simulation. So it's a statistical technique used to understand the impact of risk, uncertainty, and predictions in forecasting model. So how does it work? So this technique involves running simulations with random variables to model various possible outcomes. So what you do is you are actually simulating your business conditions, your supply chain conditions, and you try to simulate what will be the impact on the supply chain, on the business, due to various calamities. So you say, if there is a flooding, what is the kind of impact it will have? If there is an earthquake, what kind of impact it will have? If you have an epidemic, what kind of impact it will have? And your simulation will throw up the various impact that it will have on the business or the supply chain. And this will tell you the severity of each of the occurrence, and depending upon the severity or the impact, then you need to address them or prioritize them for mitigation. So Monte Carlo simulation can be used to model supply chain performance under various risk scenario. We already talked about, so if there is a crop failure, there is a price fluctuation. So, I mean, you can simulate natural disasters, you can simulate with the market factors, like, you know, there is a oversupply in the market or there is a sudden demand in the market. So you can predict this, or not predict, rather simulate all these conditions and assess the impact on the supply chain, and thus prioritize those risks or occurrences which need to be addressed on priority. Bowtie risk assessment. So this is a visual tool, and that helps identify, analyze, and manage the risk. So it is a methodology that helps stakeholders understand risk, threats, consequences, and controls. So it helps you to understand the risk, what are the threats, what are the consequences, and also control them. So why it's called the bow tie? Because it is in the shape of a bow tie. So you have the event in the center, you have the probable causes, the root causes, on the left side of the bow tie. And on the right side, you have the impact that it is going to have. And then you can build the mitigating factors, you know. That means for each of the root cause, you can decide how you are going to mitigate it, so that you are going to either avoid the event from happening, or even if it happens, you build resilience into the system so that it has minimum impact on the supply chain. The Bowtie method is useful for analyzing high-risk scenarios and communicating them throughout an organization. It's particularly suitable for complex risks, such as those that would manifest in multiple ways or impact an organization in multiple ways. It's a very simple method, very simple to understand, and this method also can be used for the risk identification, the impact identification and or impact assessment, and risk mitigation. The tool uses a diagram shaped like a bow tie to map out how a risk event, and the risk event is represented by the knot in the bow tie. So how the knot in the middle, which is the risk event, is triggered by certain hazards. So you have the hazards on the left side, and what it will lead to, the consequences, they will be on the right hand side. So they are both expanded on both the sides. So barriers or controls are added to prevent the event from occurring. So this is what I was talking about. You can mitigate the events by, you know, building certain measures or actions that can be taken to basically mitigate the risk. So bow tie analysis helps identify preventive and mitigating actions for specific risks. For example, it could be used to assess risks related to transportation disruptions, flooding or road damage, and outline measures like flood barriers, alternative routes, or backup supply routes. I would not say that it is only related to transportation disruptions. This can be used for every kind of risk. So, I mean, it's open, and this methodology can be used for every kind of risk which can be imagined. The next we come to is the HIRA tool, or the Hazard Identification and Risk Assessment. So HIRA is a tool used to identify hazards, assess their risk, and determine the control measures. So how does HIRA work? HIRA involves identifying the potential hazards, natural disasters, equipment failures, poor working conditions, etc., and assessing the likelihood and impact, and recommending mitigation measures. This is more of a textual matter. So this method is not graphical in nature, unlike some of the other tools. I would still liken this tool to something like the failure modes and effect analysis, you know, where it is more verbose in terms of the tool itself. So this tool is particularly useful for assessing environmental risks, for example, floods, droughts, pests in a rural supply chain. It can also be used to identify operational risks, such as lack of training for farmers or logistics provider. Again, these tools can have a wider application and need not be restricted to only the environmental risks, etc. Coming to the Delphi method. So the Delphi technique is a risk management method that involves a series of questionnaires sent to a panel of experts to predict the risk of an action. So this method is used, you know, where you don't have much of data available and you are relying on a panel of experts who, with their foresight, will be able to predict, you know, what is the probability of the risk, what is the impact of the risk. And you are simply going by the opinion of this panel of experts. And what you do is you are asking them through questionnaire a series of questions and trying to, you know, assimilate the wisdom of the experts. So the technique can be used to address risk and time issues during project initiation. So many times, you know, project initiation, when you're initiating a project, you haven't really faced the risk. So you are actually looking at all the probable risk which you can counter. And this is one of the areas, as I said, you know, where the sufficient data is not available. So there this method can be used. So the methodology is a panel of experts answer a series of questions regarding the potential risks. After each round, the responses are summarized and shared with the panel for further refinement. So you are asking them questions, finding the results, again presenting them to the panel of experts and trying to further refine it. And the goal is to reach a consensus on the likelihood and impact of various risks. So at one point of time, you will find that there is a consensus on, you know, what are the probable risks and what is the impact of each of those risks. So once you have that, then you need to, the next step is mitigate those risks. So Delphi method can be applied in rural areas by gathering input from local experts, farmers, cooperatives, because there is a lot of wisdom available with each of these people. And each one has a unique experience, unique background. So they can come, you know, with their past experience, etc., and add value to the perspective that they present. So we said farmers, cooperatives, government officials, to assess the risk related to weather, crop yield, and other variables. So, I mean, you can, you know, have a brainstorming on every kind of a risk. And, you know, because people have stayed there for years together, ages together, so they will be able to tell you what are the risks they can likely face and what is the probability of the risk and what could be the impact of the risk based on the historical experiences. So this method works well in environments where data is limited or unreliable. This is what we already said. Coming to the next one, what if analysis. So it's a very simple tool used to evaluate the potential impact of different scenarios by asking what if. So how does it work? The tool involves brainstorming different risk scenarios. So you say, what if there was a flood? What if there is an earthquake? What if there is a severe drought? And you look at, you know, what are the solutions or how do you mitigate those risks? So what if transportation routes are blocked due to flooding and analyzing the possible consequences for the supply chain? So how do you use this tool in the rural supply chain? The tool can be helpful in identifying a range of potential risks that can affect the supply chain, and it can help you to plan your responses, your strategies for the various scenarios, various risks. It is flexible and cost-effective tool for assessing the risks. These are related to climate, transportation, or market demand. So this can be for anything. I mean, again, there is no restriction here. Every kind of a risk can be assessed in this manner. Also, this tool can be used like we saw the Delphi method, where, you know, we shortlist the risks and the impact of this risk. So once you have them, then you can use the what if method and say, okay, now that we know these are the risks, what if, you know, this risk happens? How do we mitigate the risk? So you can use this, you know, tools in conjunction with other methods. Risk register. So a risk register is a document that lists all the identified risks, their potential impact, their likelihood, that is probability, mitigation measures, and responsible parties. So now you've gone one step ahead. With all the wisdom you have gathered, you have created a risk register. And you have created a document which actually documents all the risks that are possible, the potential impact of those risks, the probability of those risks occurring, and how you're going to mitigate those risks. And in case, you know, the risk does happen, who are the responsible parties? That means you are also assigning responsibility to these stakeholders as to who will do what in this scenario. So the risk register records detailed information about each identified risk, including description, risk rating on likelihood and impact, and action to manage and mitigate the risk. So how it is useful? A risk register helps rural supply chain managers document risks related to production, logistics, and market access, along with mitigation plan. And again, I say this, that it is not restricted to only production, logistics, and market access. You can do this for everything, right up to even the environmental factors, the political risks that you face, or the economic risks that you face. So along with the mitigation plan, such as alternative sourcing, insurance, disaster preparedness, etc. Cause and effect diagram, or fishbone, or what we also call as Ishikawa diagram. So here you have the diagram in the form of a fish bone. That means you have the head and the tail, and then you have the bone of the fish. So the head of the fish is basically the effect. And what you try to do is, what are the causes, you know, for the effect. So cause and effect analysis is a structured method for identifying the potential risks of a complex problem with multiple related causes. So here you are going to look at the various causes. It involves categorizing the causes of a risk to make them easier to identify. The result of this analysis are often displayed in a fishbone. That is why it is called as a fishbone or Ishikawa diagram. There are some steps involved in the cause and effect diagram for a risk assessment. So you first identify the risk, then you assess the severity of the risk, you establish a risk management plan, and then you monitor the risk. How does it work? The diagram is structured like a fishbone, which we have already said, with the head representing the problem or the risk, which is the effect. The risk is basically the effect. And the bones represent the different categories of potential causes. So it is a cause and effect. So if you look at the effect, the risk, what could cause the risk? What are the root causes that we try to brainstorm? So representing the bones representing different categories of potential causes, like people, process, equipment, environment. This is used even in the management studies, etc. So there we say man, machine, method, material, measurement, etc. So in rural context, we say people, process, equipment, environment. The tool can be used to identify the root causes of disruption of failures in rural supply chain, such as low crop yield, transportation delays, or market access issues, etc. So by identifying the underlying causes, better mitigation strategies can be developed. And mind you, this tool is mostly used for internal factors. So like example, if you say that there is a low yield, as the example given here, then we are looking at what are the probable causes of the low yield. So it could be either because the quality of the seeds was not good enough, or maybe the process followed in terms of the fertilizer, or the timing of the watering, or the time of planting the crop was not right. So you can actually identify various reasons, and doing so will actually get you to the answer as to what needs to be avoided. What are the root causes to be avoided to actually ensure that you get the best yield? So addressing the root causes will give you the mitigation factors. Crisis management strategies. Crisis management in rural supply chains involves preparing for or responding to and recovering from sudden disruptions. So crisis management is when actually a major crisis happens, a major disruption happens. And the whole purpose is, how do you minimize the impact of the disruption, and how do you restore operations back to the normal state? So recovering from sudden disruptions that can severely impact the flow of goods, services, or information. These disruptions can arise from natural disasters, political instability, economic shocks, or other unexpected events. So we have seen that the risk can be of various nature, can be economic, political, management failure, etc. Whatever be the case, how do you recover from the crisis? So effective crisis management ensures that rural supply chains are not only resilient in the face of crisis, but also capable of recovering and adapting to future challenges. So your objective here is not only to recover immediately from the crisis, but to make your supply chain resilient and also adapt to future challenges. So that means if similar event occurs in the future, then how do you overcome these? So these are some of the crisis management strategies that we will be looking at. crisis prevention and preparedness, effective communication, resource allocation and redirection, and we'll see each of these in more detail. Collaboration and partnership, flexibility and adaptation, rapid response and recovery, post-crisis resilience building, and learning and continuous improvement. So let's go with the crisis, further on the crisis prevention and preparedness. So a proactive approach to crisis management is essential for reducing the likelihood of crisis and ensuring a swift response when they occur. So this has to be what we mean by proactive approaches. It has to be thought of well in advance, and a strategy needs to be there in place so that you can reduce the likelihood of the crisis happening in the first place. And if it does happen, you are able to recover from it in the shortest possible time. So key strategies which include, you know, for crisis prevention and preparedness, so risk mapping and assessment. So regularly assess the potential risk and vulnerabilities in the supply chain, especially those specific to rural areas. That means those which are most probable for the area, the geographic area where you are located. And they can be in terms of climate or infrastructure or political or economic factors, because they are unique to your geographical location. So this will help identify the crisis-prone areas and prepare stakeholders for quick action. So you can have early warning systems. Implement early warning systems that can predict and monitor environmental, economic, and social risk. So the when we say environmental risk, it's weather forecast, structure, etc. Economic are market fluctuations, prices in the market, demand supply, or political instability, which is, you know, political unrest, strikes, warlike situations, etc. So this allows stakeholders to take preemptive action before a crisis escalates. Crisis simulation and drill. So like we have, you must have seen that in most organizations, you have a fire drill, which is basically used to simulate how people would behave in case of a crisis, in case of, let's say, a fire. So that you are in an office building or a school or a college building, and you have a fire drill. So similarly, you have a crisis simulation so that you are actually enacting what you would do in a real crisis situation. And the people understand the role that they are required to play in the case of a crisis. So conduct crisis simulation exercise and drills, including role playing various crisis scenario. So it could be, you know, a drought-like situation. It can be COVID-like epidemic kind of a situation, or it can be a flood-like situation. So these exercises help familiarize all stakeholders with emergency response protocols and improve decision-making under stress. So it basically reminds the people of the role that they are supposed to play, what is the protocol they are, emergency protocol they are supposed to follow in case of a crisis. And you know, if you are prepared, then there is no decision making, you know, at the time of the crisis. People automatically know what they are expected to do. Crisis response plan. Develop and formalize crisis response plans, which include a set of actions, roles, and responsibilities that will be activated in the event of a crisis. These plans should be shared across all supply chain stakeholders. So what is important here is, you need to formalize a plan. That means there has to be a formal plan in place, which will be a response plan. That means how the various roles will respond. What are the actions they will be taken? What are the roles? That means for the action, what are the roles which are designated? And who will be performing those roles? So let us say that there will be somebody who will be leading the entire crisis management. So who will be that role? And these responsibilities have to be fixed, including who is going to take what action. So this will be activated in the event of a crisis. This plan should be shared across all supply chain stakeholders. The plan has to be understood by all the stakeholders, all the people who are going to play the role and who are going to shoulder the responsibility of acting in the case of a crisis. Effective communication. Clear and efficient communication is crucial during a crisis to ensure all stakeholders understand the situation and know how to act. So when the crisis really does occur, a clear communication is required to actually say that we are in the midst of the crisis. What is the extent of the crisis? These needs to be clearly communicated so that people all are aware of the situation. Crisis communication protocol. Establish communication protocol that ensures information is shared quickly and accurately. This should include mechanism for reaching out to farmers, transporters, basically all the stakeholders, suppliers and consumers using mobile phone, radio or other local communication channels. So all the stakeholders need to have a clear communication. Channels have to be, pre-decided how you're going to communicate. In case the mobile phones don't work, etc., then what are the other methods that you're going to use, like radio or any other communication channels which are going to be used. Transparency, provide transparent and timely updates on the situation. So it's not necessary that once you have communicated about the crisis, that is the end. You need to constantly update the stakeholders on the current situation, especially if the supply chain disruptions are expected. Transparency helps maintain trust among stakeholders so that everyone knows the current situation and they know exactly how they are supposed to handle this situation. Effective communication. A centralized information hub needs to be set up. So let's look at this. Set up a centralized platform. It can be an app, a website, or a hotline for distributing crisis-related information and instructions. So a common platform where you can disseminate the information regarding this crisis, the current state, and the updates as they happen. This platform can be used to track the status of the crisis, provide real-time updates, and manage stakeholder queries, because naturally there will be people who have certain doubts, clarification, or some people may have some additional input to offer. So constantly these have to be communicated and the queries have to be satisfied. Crisis leadership and coordination. So appoint a crisis management team. So there has to be somebody who heads the crisis management team or a crisis leader. So we talked about this a little while ago when we were talking about the roles and the responsibility. So a crisis leader who is responsible for directing the response efforts, this leader should be a trusted figure in the rural supply chain community. That's somebody who has the capability, who has the competence, and who enjoys the trust of the community or the cooperative. So coming to the next one, resource allocation and redirection. So during a crisis, quickly reallocating and redistributing available resources can help mitigate the impact. So what are the key actions? Inventory management and redistribution. So let us say that your disruption of input has been faced and you have certain inputs available, fertilizer, seeds, etc. So inventory management and redistribution, this ensures that critical goods such as food, medicine, agricultural inputs, they are available in sufficient quantities, and implement the inventory management system to track stocks and direct supplies to areas most needed. So if you find that there are certain areas which are affected, severely affected, distribution should address those areas first. Areas which are not affected, they need not have to be addressed immediately. Alternative sourcing. So this is what we were talking about, the plan A, plan B, etc. So you need to have a plan B that in case your regular suppliers are unable to supply because of any natural calamity or any economic disaster, etc., then you are able to source your material from another source. So identify alternative sources of supply for essential goods, inputs, or services. This could involve sourcing from other regions. So maybe you are sourcing it from the nearest urban area, but maybe you will have to source it from another area which could be a little further away, but you need to have this backup plan. So other regions, suppliers, or even stockpiling resources in advance. So in case you find that other sources are not available in proximity, then you may also have to stockpile the resources and keep them handy for use in an emergency. Flexibility in logistics. So have backup transportation routes and logistics provider in place to adapt to disruptions. That is, in case there are blocked roads, damaged infrastructure, that means many times we've seen that there are small bridges, etc., which are washed away or damaged during a flood-like situation. And a particular route may not be accessible for a certain period of time. So in such cases, you should have a logistics partner, and different routes which can be used till normalcy is restored. Financial liquidity. Establish financial buffers such as crisis reserve or access to emergency funding to facilitate the rapid purchase of supply or services when necessary. So we saw that, when we talked about cooperative or community, etc., we said the cooperative can have this kind of a emergency fund which can be used at the time of crisis when, you need to spend the money to immediately get replenishment, for inputs, etc. Coming to the next one, collaboration and partnership. So crises often require coordinated efforts among various stakeholders, especially in the rural areas where resources may be scarce. So what are the key approaches? Public-private partnership. So engage both government bodies and private sector companies in crisis management effort. And how do we do that? Cooperatives and NGOs collaborate with local cooperatives, farmers associations, and NGOs that have local knowledge and resources. So these groups can help distribute aid, communicate with rural communities, and support recovery efforts. So you can pull in all the local resources and seek their help for restoration of normalcy, or even for distribution of aid, communication with the communities which are cut off, etc. Community involvement. Involve the local community in the crisis management process. So when you are talking of the stakeholders, the community also is part of the stakeholders. So involve the local community in the crisis management process, leveraging their knowledge of the environment and local networks. So this helps ensure that responses are culturally appropriate and logistically feasible. Because as I said, people who have been staying in that area, the geographical area, for ages, so they have a lot of historical knowledge about the place, and they also know which are the areas which are more susceptible to calamity or risk and which are less. So they can guide you in many ways during a crisis.